Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We were subjected to severe torture and my little finger was broken. I was repeatedly subjected to hitting on the head, causing bleeding multiple times. There was almost daily torture in the Israeli prisons. When prisoners' cells were raided daily, they were severely beaten every day. We say this with full certainty, and we lived through it with great bitterness.
Human Rights Watch is calling on the International Criminal Court to investigate Israel for arbitrarily detaining and torturing Palestinian healthcare workers. We'll go to Ramallah to speak with the co-author of the new report on the harrowing experiences of 8 doctors, nurses, and paramedics recently held in Israeli prisons. Then, sky-high rents and a housing shortage are major issues in the elections here in the United States.
Some corporate landlords collude with each other to set artificially high rental prices, often using algorithms in price-fixing software to do it. It's anti-competitive, and it drives up costs. I will fight for a law that cracks down on these practices.
Rent going up, one company's algorithm could be why. We'll speak with the ProPublica reporter whose explosive investigation into RealPage helped prompt a Department of Justice lawsuit. And we'll speak with Tara Ragavir with KC Tenants and the newly launched Tenant Union Federation, the first major nationwide effort at tenant organizing in 40 years. Finally, the baby food shortage. How do U.S. regulators put trade policy above baby formula supply? All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The United Nations has paused aid operations in Gaza after Israel ordered another mass evacuation from Deir al-Balah, where the UN had been forced to move its operations center after Israel attacked Rafah. This comes as medical staff have been forced to evacuate patients from Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital, the last functioning medical facility in central Gaza. This is Louise Wateridge of the UN agency UNRWA speaking from Deir al-Balah.
To describe the situation here, it's just catastrophic. The last couple of weeks, we have had relentless forced displacement orders in the middle area, in the southern area, and also in northern Gaza Strip. And what we're seeing here is hundreds of thousands of people forced to move on a daily basis. The humanitarian operations are also being displaced within these evacuation orders, and the humanitarian response here is being completely strangled and limited our ability of what we can do.
The Israeli military has revealed the United States has sent over 50,000 tons of arms and military equipment to Israel since October 7th. The weapons have arrived in more than 500 transport planes and over 100 ships, an average of almost 2 armed shipments a day for the past 10 months, during which time Israel's killed over 40,400 Palestinians, including 20 Palestinians this morning. In the occupied West Bank, an Israeli airstrike has hit the Nur Shams refugee camp near the city of Tulkarm. 5 deaths were reported. Meanwhile, Jewish settlers shot dead 1 Palestinian and wounded 6 others in an attack near Bethlehem. Meanwhile, Israel's far-right National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir has sparked outrage after he repeated his call to allow Jewish worshippers be allowed to pray at the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem. He also said he would build a synagogue on the site of the mosque if he could. The Foreign Ministry of Jordan decried Ben-Gvir's remarks as a, quote, violation of international law and an unacceptable incitement, unquote. Fears are growing of an environmental catastrophe in the Red Sea. A Greek-flagged crude oil tanker has been on fire since August 23rd after being attacked by Houthi fighters from Yemen. The tanker is carrying 150,000 tons of crude oil. That's more than 1 million barrels of oil. The Houthi movement has vowed to continue targeting ships as long as Israel continues to attack Gaza. Russia's launched another wave of strikes on Ukraine, killing at least four people. This comes a day after Russia launched one of its biggest air attacks of the war, targeting Ukraine's energy infrastructure. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's vowed to respond to the Russian strikes, which come 3 weeks after Ukrainian ground troops launched a surprise incursion into Russia. In Pakistan, the separatist Balochistan Liberation Army has taken responsibility for a series of attacks that killed more than 40 people in southwestern Pakistan. The coordinated attacks targeted police stations, railway lines, and highways. More than 20 separatist fighters also died in the attacks, the deadliest by the group in years. Major polluting nations, including the United States, are facing new calls to pay for their role in causing the climate crisis. At a major summit in the Pacific, the message from the low-lying Tuvalu nation was, if you pollute, you should pay. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres spoke in Tonga and said ocean temperatures are rising in the Pacific Islands at three times the rate worldwide.
The world must look to the Pacific and listen to science. This is a crazy situation. Rising seas are a crisis entirely of humanity's making. A crisis that will soon swell to an almost unimaginable scale with no lifeboat to take us back to safety. But if we save the Pacific, we also save ourselves. The world must act and enter the SOS before it's too late.
In Uganda, security forces violently cracked down on climate activists in the capital, Kampala, as they protested the East African crude oil pipeline known as ECOP. At least 21 people were arrested. Last week, the Ugandan government said it might forcibly take over land from over 100 people for the pipeline construction, some of whom have already refused compensation and resettlement. ECOP is a 900-mile pipeline which is set to transport oil from Uganda to Tanzania's Indian Ocean port of Tanga. France's Total Energies and the China National Offshore Oil Corporation are behind ECOP, working with Ugandan and Tanzanian state-owned oil firms. In eastern Sudan, at least 60 people were killed when the Arbat Dam collapsed, washing away entire villages. At least 130 people in Sudan have been killed in recent days from torrential downpours and flooding. The Arbat Dam supplied drinking water for the coastal city of Port Sudan, where Sudan's military is based.
The situation is catastrophic, to be honest. We have children, families, elderly, and others that need continuous medication, and this is the fourth day. The issue is not just the food that we need to send. The water came into them and destroyed all the villages, and we don't know the circumstances they are going through now. We call on the state's government and the Sovereignty Council to quickly intervene.
Today marks 500 days since Sudan's civil war broke out, triggering a devastating humanitarian crisis. More than 10 million people have been displaced, tens of thousands killed and injured. There have been widespread reports of sexual violence, and famine and cholera have been reported in camps for displaced people. Recent international peace talks quickly petered out as the Sudanese army and their rival Rapid Support Forces paramilitary refused to negotiate. French President Emmanuel Macron is refusing to name a new prime minister and government led by the Progressive New Popular Front coalition, launching a fresh round of talks while France remains at a political impasse. The New Popular Front coalition, which quickly came together to stave off a possible far-right victory, gained the largest number of seats in July's legislative elections, a snap election called by Macron. The leftist France Unbowed party, a member of the New Popular Front, is calling for mass demonstrations September 7th. President Biden's national security advisor, Jake Sullivan, China, meeting with China's top diplomat, Wang Yi. Sullivan is the first U.S. national security advisor to travel to China since 2016. In related news, Canada's announced it'll impose 100% tariff on Chinese-made electrical vehicles following a similar move by the Biden administration. China condemned the move, saying it was in violation of World Trade Organization rules. In campaign news, Donald Trump and his running mate J.D. Vance are attempting to downplay their anti-abortion record. On Friday, Trump claimed he, quote, will be great for women and their reproductive rights, unquote. Meanwhile, J.D. Vance claimed on Sunday Trump would veto a federal abortion ban. He made the comment in an interview with Christine Welker on Meet the Press.
Senator Graham said to me, I'm going to keep saying that there should be a federal ban. If such a piece of legislation landed on Donald Trump's desk, would he veto it?
Well, I think it'd be very clear he would not support it. I mean, he said that explicitly.
It?
Yeah, I mean, if you're not supporting it as the president of the United States, you fundamentally have to veto it.
So he would veto a federal abortion ban?
I think he would. He said that explicitly that he would.
Senator Elizabeth Warren later appeared on Meet the Press and responded to Vance's claim.
American women are not stupid, and we are not going to trust the futures of our daughters and granddaughters to two men who have openly bragged about blocking access to abortion for women all across this country.
Special Counsel Jack Smith has asked a federal appeals court to reinstate the criminal case against Donald Trump for illegally keeping classified national security documents after his presidency ended. The case was dismissed last month by federal judge Aileen Cannon, who ruled Attorney General Merrick Garland had no authority to appoint Smith as a special counsel. In a brief, Smith argued Cannon's decision ignored decades of Supreme Court precedent and misconstrued the statutes that authorize the special counsel's appointment. Aileen Cannon was nominated by President Trump. The League of United Latin American Citizens has asked the Justice Department to open a probe after Texas officials raided the homes of a number of Latino elected leaders, candidates, and political operatives in South Texas. Republican Attorney General Ken Paxton is facing accusations he's using his office to harass and intimidate Latinx voters in an effort to suppress their votes. In other voting news, the Democratic National Committee and the Georgia Democratic Party have sued to halt new election rules in Georgia that Democrats fear could be used to block certification of election results if Democrats win in November. Under the new rules, local election officials could delay certifying election results until they conduct what's described as a reasonable inquiry. The Democratic lawsuit warns this new rule could, quote, invite chaos after Election Day. Journalist Ari Berman recently wrote, quote, five alarm fire for democracy in Georgia, MAGA majority on state election board laying groundwork not to certify election if Trump loses again. They're telegraphing exactly how they're planning to try to steal the election this time, unquote. In other news from Georgia, a 12-foot statue of the late civil rights icon and congressman John Lewis has been unveiled outside the historic Decatur Courthouse in outer Atlanta. The statue replaces a Confederate obelisk that was taken down in 2020 during the Black Lives Matter protests in response to the police murder of George Floyd. In immigration news, a federal judge in Texas sided with 16 Republican-led states, halting a Biden administration policy that would give spouses of U.S. citizens legal status without having to first leave the country. The policy would prevent families from being separated, possibly for years, long stretches, and could offer a path to citizenship for up to 500,000 people. The mayor of Nashville, Tennessee, is calling on city lawmakers to pass four new public safety policies in response to a series of Nazi gatherings in the city. One policy creates buffer zones around public buildings. Another prohibits the placement of signs over highways. A third bans the distribution of handbills before sunrise or after sunset. And the pioneering climate journalist Peter Dykstra has died at the age of 67. After 17 years at CNN, he became the publisher of Environmental Health News and The Daily Climate. Prior to his time at CNN, he spent over a decade working for Greenpeace. He appeared on Democracy Now! A decade ago and talked about corporate media coverage of the climate crisis.
I would ask people sometime soon, watch a half hour of network news one of the next few evenings. What you won't see in all likelihood is serious discussion of climate change. What you will see are one or two or three commercials from the oil and coal industry talking about generating jobs and keeping the lights lit and keeping America prosperous and keeping us away from foreign oil.
The pioneering climate journalist Peter Dykstra speaking in 2014. He died on July 31st at the age of 67. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. Coming up, Human Rights Watch is calling on the International Criminal Court to investigate Israel for arbitrarily detaining and torturing Palestinian healthcare workers. We'll go to Ramallah and the occupied West Bank. Stay with us. Maybe, by Al-Fajr. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show with a call by Human Rights Watch for the International Criminal Court to investigate Israel for arbitrarily detaining and torturing Palestinian healthcare workers. A new report by Human Rights Watch details the harrowing experiences of eight doctors, nurses, and paramedics who were recently held in Israeli prisons, where they describe being blindfolded, beaten, held in forced stress positions, and handcuffed for extended periods of time. They also reported torture, including rape and sexual abuse by Israeli forces. Ed Abed, a 50-year-old surgeon who was taken by Israeli forces from Beit Lahia's Indonesia hospital in November, told Human Rights Watch, quote, "Every minute we were beaten, I mean all over the body, on sensitive areas between the legs, the chest, the back. We were kicked all over the body and the face. They used the front of their boots, which had a metal tip, then their weapons. They had lighters. One soldier tried to burn me, but burned the person next to me. I told them I'm a doctor, but they didn't care," unquote. Others describe being held in metal cages and seeing other detained Palestinians beaten to death. The Human Rights Watch report also details how 36-year-old paramedic Waleed Khalili was taken to the notorious Sde Tayman prison, where Israeli forces suspended him and dozens of other detainees, most of them stripped and wearing diapers, from the ceiling with chains attached to their handcuffs. Israeli forces then shocked him with electric wires. The report also referred to a Palestinian prisoner who was gang raped by Israeli soldiers using an M16 rifle. Human Rights Watch's findings track with other reports by Gaza's medical workers who've been detained by Israel since October 7th. In July, Dr. Mohammed Abu Salmeya, the director of Al-Shifa Hospital, described his detention in an Israeli prison for 7 months without charge.
The torture was very severe in Israeli prisons. I am a doctor. My weight was 87 kilograms. I lost in 45 days more than 25 kilograms of my weight. I lost my balance. I lost focus. I lost all feeling. We were shackled for 45 days, handcuffed for 45 days. However you describe the suffering and insults in prison, you can never know the reality unless you lived through it.
That was Dr. Saeed Abdulrahman Marouf, For more, we're joined in Ramallah by Melina Ansari, the Israel and Palestine assistant researcher for Human Rights Watch and a lawyer. She co-authored the new Human Rights Watch report, Israel, Palestinian Healthcare Workers Tortured. Thank you very much for joining us. You're joining us from the from Ramallah in the occupied West Bank. Can you talk overall about your findings and who are all the people you talk to?
Thank you, Amy, and much appreciated for having us here. The report on the torture and detention of Palestinian healthcare workers includes 8 testimonies of Palestinian paramedics, nurses, doctors, and surgeons who currently have been working in Gaza and living in Gaza for the past 10 months during the current hostilities. Many of the doctors and the nurses, 6 of them, were detained and arrested when they were actually in the hospital doing their duties and whatever they can to make sure the Palestinians who are injured and Palestinians who need the medical care for their own survival are granted this humanitarian medical needs. So 6 of the doctors were detained during a siege on hospitals, as well as during coordinated evacuation missions from the hospitals that are in the northern area of Gaza to hospitals in the southern areas. So what I'm trying to say is clearly these healthcare workers were detained while they were doing their job, tasked and in a situation where Palestinians in Gaza are urgently needing medical care and medical assistance. The testimonies, as you mentioned, are consistent with many other testimonies gathered by OHCHR, for example, Palestinian and Israeli human rights organizations, where it gives us a window into how Israeli authorities are treating Palestinians in detention. We were able to speak to 8 healthcare workers in order to really connect and better understand the health infrastructure in Gaza. So the detention and torture of healthcare workers at this current moment in Gaza is only exaggerating and worsening the conditions of the catastrophic health infrastructure in Gaza. So the testimonies are of torture, beatings, punches, kicks with steel-toed boots by Israeli soldiers, using military dogs to attack and intimidate detainees, but as well as using stress positions for prolonged period of times while being blindfolded and cuffed by the hands and feet. Many of the healthcare workers we spoke to, as healthcare workers, being experts in medical knowledge, testified to us and reported seeing and witnessing and being themselves subjected to medical neglect, where they have seen detainees with visible trauma and blunt trauma on their bodies, visible bites of dogs on their bodies as well. They told us as well from their wounds during their detention and arrest, they were not given any proper medical treatment. And when I talk about medical treatment inside detention, this is the bare minimum that's guaranteed under international humanitarian law, where the Geneva Conventions require the detaining authority to provide proper medical health care, proper monitoring of the conditions. But then we have testimonies and we have reports that talk about amputation of Palestinian limbs, including hands and feet, from prolonged cuffings and amputations without anesthesia as well. So sadly, this is honestly just a small example of what Human Rights Watch was able to document, but we're talking about hundreds of other cases of testimonies from either UN or Israeli human rights organizations that talk about some kind of a systematic pattern of ill-treatment and abuse in detention. And really important to highlight that when we talk about these 8 healthcare workers, for example, for specific, they were not charged with any offenses. They were not brought before trial. So this is why we concluded that the detention was unlawful. They were either detained from 7 weeks up to 5 months, none of them being informed why they are being detained or for how long they are being detained. They're just experiencing ill treatment and tortured at the hands of the Israeli authorities, which is, again, only a window into the general detention conditions of Palestinian prisoners and detainees. And currently, we're talking about 9,000 Palestinians who are in Israeli custody. 3,000 of them are under administrative detention, which is detaining a person without trial, without charge for an indefinite time. And this includes hundreds of children, dozens of women as well, elderly journalists and human rights defenders. So we're really ringing the alarm about the situation inside the Israeli custody and detention facilities. And again, when we talk about military bases or detention facilities where Palestinians are detained, these cases are of Palestinians who were taken outside of Gaza. So they were forcibly deported from Gaza into detention facilities and detention military bases inside Israel. And this is considered a war crime under international humanitarian law of forcible deportation. And for those Palestinians who were detained inside the occupied West Bank or inside the occupied Palestinian territory have been forcibly transferred outside of their occupied territory, which is also a war crime under international humanitarian law. So the alarms are ringing. And this is why Human Rights Watch is calling for the International Criminal Court Office of the Prosecutor to ensure including the treatment of Palestinian detainees and prisoners in their open investigation into the situation in Palestine. We know that the prosecutor at the ICC requested arrest warrants for two Israeli senior officials as well as Hamas officials. So for the Israeli officials, they are being the arrest warrants are for war crimes and crimes against humanity. However, we did not notice that the ill treatment, the detention and the torture of Palestinians inside Israeli detention was included during the calls or applications for arrest warrant. And we really sincerely put pressure on states and governments to also make sure that there is genuine accountability for the treatment of Palestinians inside Israeli detention. As you may know, or to really highlight this this information, that the International Committee for the Red Cross that's mandated to monitor detention conditions in order to make sure they comply with international standards has been banned since the start of the hostilities from monitoring Israeli prisons and detention centers, which rings the alarm and the bells even higher with regards to what exactly is happening inside detention and inside Israeli custody, because we're hearing about reports of Palestinian deaths in custody. According to Haaretz, there are 48 cases of deaths in custody since the beginning of the hostilities of Palestinians who were declared dead or have been killed inside detention. And there is no clarity to the reasons or the circumstances that led to their deaths. Physicians for Human Rights Israel was able to participate in the autopsy of 5 cases of Palestinian detainees who were pronounced dead inside Israeli detention. And some of the cases included clear medical neglect, and others included that the deaths was a cause of torture and ill treatment. And I would just highlight that 2 cases of these deaths in custody were of Palestinian healthcare workers, like Dr. Adnan Al-Bursh, who was declared by the Israeli prison services back in April killed, and as well as Dr. Iyad Al-Rantisi, who was also killed during detention. So again, the bells are ringing, and there needs to be better clarity and understanding to what's happening inside detention, but also to be confident in asking the question of why are these Palestinians inside detention when they're being detained for prolonged periods of time without being brought before a judge or even without any charges presented against them? So there's a lot of questions that should be asked.
Let me ask you, Melina. Earlier, we played a clip of Dr. Saeed Abdulrahman Maarouf. In February, he was jailed. He's a Palestinian doctor jailed by Israel for 45 days, described being tortured in Israeli custody, was jailed after Israeli forces raided Al-Ahli Arab Hospital in Gaza City. And now I want to play a clip for you from Dr. Mohammed Abu Salmeya. We mentioned him earlier. In July, he's the director of Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza. He described his detention in an Israeli prison for 7 months without charge.
We were subjected to severe torture, and my little finger was broken. I was repeatedly subjected to hitting on the head, causing bleeding multiple times. There was almost daily torture in the Israeli prisons. When prisoners' cells were raided daily, they were severely beaten every day. We say this with full certainty, and we lived through it with great bitterness.